Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Welcome to another episode of Atlanta Technology Leaders. I'm your host, Kevin Finn, and as usual, we have a jam-packed, great show for you today. Later in the show, we're going to be talking with Nicholas Downey, the founder and CEO of Needworks, Will McGinnis, the analytics engineer with Predicto Analytics, and James Yancey, founder and CEO, Sean Gordon, CEO of Intelliverse. But first up on Atlanta Technology Leaders, we have the James Yancey, founder and CEO of CloudTags. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So tell me just a little bit about yourself and what you guys are out doing for folks.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually a Georgia native, which is unusual, it seems,
like
these days.
You're the one.
So. I'm the one. Yep. On the record, I am the one Georgia native. So I grew up in Atlanta. I was one of the early employees of an Atlanta-based company called 360i, which is the largest social media and digital data agency in the world now. And so I was with them for about 10 years. And so we have extensive experience from those past businesses understanding online how customers like to receive personalized content, interactions, and offers. And, you know, that took a decade of work to really understand that. Now we've reassembled a new team under CloudTags for many of those former employees from my previous company. And we're just updating those models to take into consideration context and location, because the thing that's changed now is people aren't on desktops and laptops. They're all on mobile devices, standing in the physical world, and that changes how we think about interacting with them in stores. So we're mostly focused on retail right now, behaviors in retail.
So how is mobile really changing the whole shopping industry?
Sure. So, you know, if you think about sort of the different chapters of what we learned of retail, you have a historical retail that's gone on for thousands of years and having a physical space and products and people. And then, you know, as we had the e-commerce revolution, we took those behaviors, but we made them virtual in terms of seeing content on a page, but not experiencing the physical product. Then we had the social media revolution, which was kind of a two-way interaction with customers and their thoughts about product. Now we're bringing all of those experiences, the virtual experience from a website and the social experience back into the physical store in the four walls. So the mobile experience is allowing us to do what we think is the most interesting, which is taking the tactile, physical, I can feel it, touch it, experience it aspect and merging it with a personalized digital data experience because you have your own device in the store now.
Definitely. So how are you guys really implementing that, and how is the customer really taking it?
Yeah. So one of the big things we focus on is there's a lot of talk in the industry right now about the possibilities that new technologies bring. You hear a lot about beacons recently, which is Apple and other companies have the ability to put small sensors that know that you're nearby a product or near a location and it triggers content. So there's a lot of possibility, but if you walk into a physical retail store today, I think we can all agree that very few to no customers are actually using their phones to have a brand experience.
Yeah,
they're on their phones. They're on Facebook. They're talking to a friend. They're doing other things on their phones. But your first inclination today when you walk into Saks Fifth Avenue, let's say, is not to open the Saks app to go scan a barcode or interact with the product. The experience is very poor in the store. And so we started looking at this saying, you know, the big problem is there's a huge gap between what's technologically possible on phones and what customer behavior is actually doing today.
Definitely.
And so we said we want to actually remove all the barriers of doing a digital experience in the store. So not downloading an app, not having to sign up or register, not having to change the settings on your phone. And so we're doing that by actually implementing, putting branded experiences via tablets that are owned and provided by the brand when you're in their store for you to use mobily as you explore the store.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you imagine, I'm just using Saks as an example, but you know, imagine walking into Saks and you go into jeans and shop like you normally would. Suddenly you would actually see in that section a Saks tablet. So it's branded as Saks. Saks owns the tablet. But the difference is this is not a static kiosk. This is not something where you're stationary. You're actually taking their device and walking around their store to explore. And so we can use the most futuristic technologies, all the things I mentioned before, NFC, BLE, RFID, to create these amazing experiences without you having to download, set up things on your phone. So we engage you in the store, and you walk around, have this experience, and build collections of the things you're looking at. And then that whole experience can be downloaded on your phone as well. Okay. So it's both.
So you basically took the one problem that people are having with this experience right now, the fact that people won't take 30 seconds to download an app, and you guys remove that completely. So I walk into a store, you hand me a tablet or a smart device, And what kind of experiences am I getting around the store with this device?
Yeah, it obviously it varies a lot by age group and the type of the store. But a lot of our work right now is in luxury retail. So it's more high consideration brands. So anything that you're, you know, furniture is a great example, right? So furniture, you're not going to walk out there with a sofa, most likely, maybe at IKEA, but generally speaking, no. And also luxury goods. Typically, if you're buying a $1,000 suit, for example, you might make an impulse purchase, but less likely. And so the whole idea is that by giving you this really interesting immersive content experience, this location and contextually based, you're actually interacting with products. So we're recording the kinds of things you're interacting with and what you're looking to buy. And then at the end of the experience, we ask you whether or not you want to opt in via email to receive the collection you built on the store.
So that's a lot better than me checking out and they're like, oh, do you want to check this box and get emails from me? And then a month later, I'm like,
exactly. Why am I signed up for the spam?
So my biggest question is in these luxury stores, the biggest aspect it used to be was the salesperson. How is this impacting the salesperson? Is it replacing them? Is it helping them make more sales? Or how is that working?
Yeah, so we've actually built it so it's extremely versatile, which is to say that a customer can walk in and take the device on their own with explanatory content and start to walk around the store without interacting with the salesperson at all. However, we've also designed it so that anytime the sales staff member has an NFC tag, NFC just means you can touch or tap. So you take the tablet, you touch your badge. It could be the beginning experience, so we know a staff member is driving this now.
Okay.
Or a customer could start it on their own. In the middle of the session, a staff member walks up, and then they actually tap their badge on the back of the tablet. So we actually know a customer started this journey, but the staff member is now interacting with them. So I think the answer to your question is it really depends on the brand. For the most part, what we're trying to do is we're trying to allow those customers who don't want to interact with a sales staff member, which there is a population, the ability to still explore the store, be really engaged, get deep content, et cetera. For those who enjoy the staff experience and for those brands who believe they have a good quality staff experience, it's additive, which is to say it's allowing the sales associate to sell through imagery. If you think about, I mean, think about how many times you walked into a store and you're going to go buy denim and you say, I'm looking for diesel size 32. And, you know, the sales associate walks over the shelf edge and kind of pulls down a piece of denim, holds it up in front of your face and says, this is what you want? And you're like,
I guess
I'll try it on. Versus them saying, hey, look, you know, you tap the shelf edge, which then triggers all of this visual content and video and images and saying, look, this is what the product looks like. This is the aspirational side of the product. And so it's allowing, it's evolving the sales associate's role in a couple ways. One is they can sell via image, which is becoming much more popular today. The second is, if you think about the term in the industry right now is omnichannel, connecting online and offline. And basically, today, if I walk into Saks, the sales associate is saying, okay, if I'm going to make any money, I have to sell this pair of denim to this person before they leave. And, you know, it could be high pressure depending on what the sales staff is like. Instead, if they have the ability to identify who the customer is and give them a collection of what they're considering buying. So instead, I walk in and I'm not ready to buy the pair of jeans, but the sales associate's working with me and they help me build a collection and I identify myself via email at the end. Now, a week later, I go online and I buy that pair of jeans I saw in the store. We're actually working with our clients, so that sales associate's getting credit for the online sale because we can connect it.
And that's going to make them a lot less high pressure there in pushing the sale there in the store. I also think from the store owner point of view, you're going to be able to track a lot more analytics about your salespeople, being like, okay, well, this guy touched 7 different people in the store last week, and he's been following up with them, where this guy, he wasn't really helping anybody. Yeah, so that also helps with that also.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem in retail, the way we kind of boil it down is, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of physical store real estate, and the cost of that's rising. And for the most part, the retailers have no idea who all these people are walking around these spaces they've invested in and they built unless they purchase something. And there's many, many people that don't purchase anything. Even for the ones that do purchase something, there may be 20 other things they looked at and they buy one thing. So they have a record of one thing the person bought.
Yep.
But there's 19 things that they're interested in buying and they have no idea what those things were.
Yeah.
Our background is online. We understand all of that from the website. And so all we've been doing is trying to look at comparable models of what we've seen online in terms of data gathering and optimization. Online, you call it remarketing.
Yeah.
You go on a website, you look at stuff. If it's done correctly and it doesn't badger you too much, then they send you some ads afterwards of things you're looking at. And that is the easiest way to increase sales.
Definitely.
In a physical store where 90% of the sales still occur, and people forget that, it's 90% still in a physical store, 10% still globally online for e-commerce. In the 90%, you have none of that data. All you know, the only way you know I visited generally is if I bought something. and you only know what I bought. So you have no other, you have no idea how to increase sales by re-engaging me for the stuff I'm looking at. And that's what we're really trying to solve.
So you're basically taking the online shopping experience, putting it in where 90% of the sales are going, so you can track those same analytics.
Exactly.
That's perfect. So how are you guys, we talked about brand recognition and brand loyalty a little bit earlier. How is this really helping these stores? What's the value proposition for the stores?
Well, for the store, for their own brand or for the customer or both?
For both, yeah.
Yeah. So for them, it is very much a data play. For them, it is solving that problem I mentioned before, which is to say, okay, we know we have a lot of customers in the store. We don't know who they are. We don't know what they want to buy in the future. This fills in that gap. From a customer standpoint, all of the, you know, the trend in retail right now is moving toward experiential versus transactional, which is to say that, you know, many people, if you think about going to a movie theater, you go to amusement park, a museum, et cetera, those are all experiences. And so retail in the physical space is becoming more experiential, which means you would go in there, you'd have this amazing experience to learn more about products. It's not necessarily about taking it home.
Yeah.
Everything's moving to same day shipping. So if I go to Saks, especially if I live in New York, you know, LA, London, you don't want to carry this stuff on with you anyway.
Not on a $1,000 suit, no.
Exactly right. And so if it's going to be shipped to my house at 3 p.m. and I'm at the store and it's 12, or I could take it home with me, the whether or not you actually take the product from the store or you get it delivered to your house is negligible. And so really, in moving to experiential retail, they're trying to figure out, how do we transform these spaces that were transactional into something that's experiential, using content, using data, using personalization. And so for the customer, the benefit is they're getting a curated collection, which means I just spend an hour in your store.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can take pictures of price tags on my own phone. I can kind of remember my head, or I can get home and open an email that says, here's your Saks digital collection.
Yeah.
Direct links to everything that I saw. So the benefit for them is curation, but it's also trying to give them an experience versus a transactional errand.
That's huge. So how does the whole software side of this work, and where's the future of it? Are you guys building it yourself, or what's going on?
Yeah,
with that?
So we built the personalization and the data platform. We're using hardware that's not proprietary to us. So we use iPads, we use Google Nexus 7 tablets, and we brand those and skin them so they feel as it's integrated part of the brand experience. But the platform that we use, we're building off of a core that's called LifeRay. So it's a LifeRay platform, but all of the data processing, the algorithms, et cetera, that's all unique IP of Cloud Tags. There's a very well-known professor who's my co-founder, who's actually a professor at Emory Business School, Steve Stuck, who's been involved in a lot of Atlanta-based business successes, Blink Media, eTour, 360i. And
definitely.
So the data is all proprietary to Cloud Tags. It's just the actual devices or just things that we brand on the outside.
Okay. Where do you see the sort of the future of this going? I know wearable technology is the new biggest push, from watches to Google Glass. Do you have any plans to integrate that if that becomes actually standard?
Yeah. I mean, definitely the device types are going to change, which makes this all the more interesting. And so we're doing this with tablets today because it's a very today experience. We've talked to brands about, you know, them actually providing Google Glass for their customers to use while they're in the store, which would be quite interesting. And so basically, we know the device types are going to change. But what's not going to change in the near term is you're physically standing somewhere, you have products around you in proximity, we know certain bits of data about you, and how do we connect what we know about you and where you are and where those products are to create experience? So it's great if there's an iWatch, which we're all hopeful for, or if it's Google Glass, because either of those things, I think we take it for granted there's actually a lot of stupidity in holding a piece of glass in your hand all day long. You know, I think we take it for granted that it's just actually it's not a great experience. And so we believe that there will be future experiences that don't require your hands all of the time. And for retail, obviously, that's massive. That's huge. So imagine going in store. Instead, you have something in your wrist, you have something on your eyes, and everything becomes visual, or everything becomes, you know, tied to a display on your wrist. Therefore, you have more ability to then, you know, interact with the physical world. So our platform, doesn't matter what kind of device it is, they all have APIs and different things you use. The more the idea is, how do you change the customer experience based on that type of device to be most, blending the physical and digital.
Efficient. And are you guys moving towards targeted marketing, towards once you get this information on these customers, they walk in a store, you know, this is John Smith, you know, he always buys jeans every 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of questions about the future. That would be like the future. I think we built a B2B2C company, which means, there's other companies that are like an app you download and you go shopping across brands.
You connect the dots.
Right. And so we're actually working with the brands. One of the things we learned is, even if you have a really popular shopping app, none of the brands like the fact that you're doing a third-party brand experience in the walls of their store, right? Saks, Macy's, whoever, they hate the fact, you know, that you're in their store and you're on another third party's app instead of their experience. Yeah. So we've been really working with the brands to enhance and deepen the experience they provide their customers inside the four walls of the store. In the future, if those brands want to start to work collectively to exchange data and allow the customers to be in a network, and we're certainly supportive of that and open those conversations. But to be frank, that's probably a good 3 to 4 years away.
Okay. Well, how can we help you? What do you need more of? Do you need more clients? Do you need more? Do you need more money, investors? What do you need more of?
You know, I think right now we're actually pretty good on those fronts. You know, I think just for the Atlanta community in general, I would say, you know, we found a lot of support in the Atlanta community. We actually started the business in London. It's an Atlanta-based company, but we started working with clients in London. And to be fair, I've lived in New York. I lived in London for a number of years. And I was a little bit hesitant to come back here and start the business headquarters here, to be totally frank. But I have to say, I think with ATV and other investments, it's definitely getting a lot better in Atlanta. So I think, you know, congrats to everyone who's in more of the local business community for making it a better place to get started.
Yeah, thanks, David.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't going to say explicitly, but you did, so it's fine.
Definitely. Well, how do our listeners reach out if they want to contact you, learn more, maybe if they have a business they want to implement this in?
Great. Yeah, the website is www.cloudtags. CloudTags with an S. There's a CloudTag, which is a personal fitness device. So that is not us. CloudTags.com. And my email is simply james@cloudtags.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming
on. Thank you very much.
And how about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest? All right. Well, next up on Atlanta Technology Leaders, we have Nicholas Downey, the CEO of NeedWorks. Welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Kevin.
So you're sitting there patiently. You laughed at all my bad jokes. You're doing a great job so far.
Actually, I was enraptured by James's interview. So most of my customers today are in retail. I was absorbing everything I could from that conversation.
All right. Well, tell me about what you do and sort of a little backstory on how you got there.
Sure. Absolutely. NeedWorks started out as a custom software company, mainly doing integration and add-ons to people's existing pieces. And over time, we started to develop a lot of internal tools ourselves, mainly around project management. And we ended up building from the ground up an ERP system that's targeted for the cloud. And we did that because the bulk of our customers were people who wanted integration with existing ERP and couldn't do X, Y, and Z for whatever, or they hated the screens. We found ourselves having people pay us to build software that emulated the functionality of the existing system just in a nicer screen that was easier to click on. And so our new tagline for this year is, when you're done spending money on SAP, come talk to Need. And so, you know, we can be up and running where SAP typically has got a 2-year installation process and customization. We can have you an ERP system up in 6 to 8 weeks if you have your game together.
Wow.
Now, you know, I get attacked a little bit from the ERP community because they say to me, well, show me your general ledger software. And I say, no, that's been solved. That's Oracle Financials, that is SAP, that's something else. I don't want to be your general ledger. But I do have, you know, a full catalog piece. We integrate with Stibo. You know, we can solve a lot of the problems in a simple fashion where a lot of my predecessors are this great big iron, huge interface, 6 months of training before you can actually use the thing. And so we're pretty organic in that. And we've had some really good traction in the retail segment recently.
Well, I can imagine too. And I think you brought up a really good point, is the fact that you're not having to reteach people stuff, because that takes a lot of time, money, and there's a lot of resistance there. Once you've learned something, people don't want to learn a newer software or learn how to do something differently.
Yeah, if you look at the cost of a 6-month training program, it's going to be $30,000 per employee, and that's a sunk cost. And so convincing people to move, you've got to show that you can take half an hour and 20 clicks down to 30 seconds and 2 clicks and actually do it effectively every time.
Yeah.
And that's what we focus on. We focus strictly on the user experience. If you've ever sat in front of some of the traditional SAP or ERP systems, their interfaces are awful. It's hard to make heads or tails of stuff. If you don't know exactly what all those 30 icons up top are, good luck.
So talk about how you're simplifying it and going in there. So
really, it's driven around task, right? What is your role and what do you do on a day-to-day basis? Do you need to see 10,000 columns of information, or will 5 get the job done? Do you need to be able to navigate to the same place 20 different ways, or is one good home button up top? It's all about sitting with the users for a day or 2 days or a week or whatever it takes, and just watching what they do and listen to what they do. And you'll find that accounts payable is accounts payable from any company to the other, right? And goods receipt is goods receipt from one company to the other. And it's about streamlining the interface. You can imagine in a traditional ERP system, if I want to order some materials and have it dispatched to 12 locations, you know, it's 20 or 30 screens, right?
Yeah.
In ours, it's from warehouse A to a group of stores, right?
Yeah.
Next. what do you want to send? This article, and this article. Look them up. You know, auto complete by name, by text, as you're typing, as opposed to go dip into a catalog and then come back out. Got my 10 articles. When would you like them to be there? Tomorrow. Awesome. It's going to cost you this. Great. Submit. Out it goes to the warehouses, right? Records are created wherever they need to go. It's just much more simple than 20 screens, dip, look, add, build.
You're saving hours and hours of time. Exactly. You're saving a bunch of money. My question is why isn't everyone doing it this way? It seems like you're doing you look at it from a common sense point of view, and you're like, hey, this is an easy way to do it. Why do they make it so complex?
You know, it's an excellent question, and we like to joke. You know, a lot of the guys out there in this space like to say, I'm the everything software. You go through the Atlanta airport, and it says the UN World Food Program runs SAP. Well, what do they do with it? Well, we do everything with it. That's a great place to start. Help me out with everything, right? Let's dig in. And we like to come in. We don't want to boil the ocean overnight. We'll do it a teaspoon at a time. And you don't have to turn on all my modules at once. If all you want is the ordering piece, that's all you have to have. If all you want is the labor planning piece, that's all you have to have. And so you get people comfortable with slimline interfaces, right?
Yeah.
And then gradually move them into other pieces. And one of the things that we focus on is the database underneath is obviously very complex.
Yeah, definitely.
But we slim it down on the front end. We put the hard work on the engineers.
The UI.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I get some pushback from my engineers. I'm like, why do I have to do this? I'm like, because you're not the person who uses it. So it's one of a different approach to software. Rather than trying to solve every problem for every business all at the same time, nice small bites that can be done quickly and effectively. And, you know, my staff, we like to joke, if you don't have Georgia Tech on your resume, you're not on my engineering team. And that's the truth. And so we are guys who think about enterprise. We like big problems.
You know,
the notion of big data is something that's near and dear to our hearts. And we're always thinking about our infrastructure and our implementation and our product roadmap in terms of what are problems so big that you can't put your head around yet. I want you to think about the infrastructure that you're developing. I want you to think about the tables and the indexes that you're creating, because I've got to keep it simple for the user. Simple is what wins.
Yeah. Right?
And so it's just a different focus on product development that is kind of missing, in my opinion. You know, SAP has stumbled recently with their HANA offering.
Yeah.
Their architect left for the cloud piece. We just learned from a lot of lessons that came before us.
Well, less is definitely more, as you're proving. And it seems like you guys are pushing the ceiling of, and a lot of people said, well, the industry is sort of concreted yourself, but you guys are pushing it in a different direction. So how's the growth of your industry coming along?
It's, you know, there's not a lot of people that willingly start up a new company to go get into the ERP space. Again, we kind of stumbled into it a little bit, but we have a lot of add-on tools, right? So because our stuff was designed from the cloud from the ground up, because we're all Georgia Tech, we have mobile apps that do everything you can do in the fully leaded web interface, right? And then specifically for retail, we listen to our customers, right? So one of the problems with a lot of stores or a lot of large retailers is oftentimes the location can change and corporate doesn't know about it. And if they do, they're late to the game. And sometimes that change can be impactful. So one of the pieces that we built, quite by demand of our customers, is a way to look at my location. I want to visualize my 200,000 square foot facility in my browser, right?
Wow.
I want to see it. I want to be able to zoom in. I want to drill down to the aisle level. I want to be able to pull up a picture of the shelf. I want to be able to see what's on there. Oh, and by the way, here's the work that's coming up this week and next week and the week after that's going to come in and touch that shelf. So I've got new product coming in this day. I've got a new sign kit coming in the week later. And because that dovetails in with the ERP piece, it's much easier to visualize what's going on in the store. So for example, we have an app for the store manager. It says, show me the most heavily shopped shelves in the store from yesterday, and I'm going to go dispatch my associates to do that. So you can imagine you've got a big map of the store, and the ones that are highlighted in red were the most heavily sold SKUs from yesterday, so you should go remerchandise those shelves right now. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to assign employee A, B, and C, and now that shows up in my labor spend and my time tracking for my employees, and it's all kind of integrated into one experience.
Well, and because it seems like you guys super understand the industry, and since you built it from the ground up, you guys can do whatever you want, where I would imagine they go to these other people and they're like, well, we don't have that feature to really give that to you. So that must give you a lot of flexibility just building from the ground up.
It really does. And frankly, you know, we do. I know I'm kicking SAP all over the town. I'm sure I'll get an angry phone call later. But we do integrate with SAP. So we recognize that they are the dominant leader and we play with them. Now, I contacted a local SAP consultant. He's a friend of mine from a past life. And I said, I want you to come and set up a dev SAP system so that I can integrate with it and test. And even though he was the expert and he was in my office for almost 60 hours a week, it still took him 4 weeks to get it stood up. And it took a massive computer to run the thing. And we still barely understand how to configure it, right? And we like to think we're pretty smart guys. So,
well, yeah, you all graduated from tech.
Yeah,
so.
You know. So, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's just one of those ones where the complexity is the killer. That's what slows you down. And, you know, in a lot of organizations today, specifically in retail, you have to be fast. It's the first guy to market in many cases.
Definitely. Well, it's good that you understand your customer. Again, I bring it back to that because it's so important, because for the layman, for someone saying, oh, I want to be able to look at a shelf on my store and see what the most heavily trafficked thing, that can't be that hard. Well, actually, it's really hard. It's really complex for you guys to build that. But for the customer that you guys are serving, they don't understand that. So you have to be able, you guys can serve them the best out of anyone,
it's really non-trivial, and it's a fun data problem, because if you think about it, if you walk into any Lowe's in Atlanta, there is probably 1,100 different bays. So they call them bays. That's, you know, the two uprights in the shelves, right? And each bay probably has at least 3 or 4 shelves in it, and each shelf probably has 10 SKUs on it. I mean, do the math, man. By the time you've got 1,000 locations across the country, you're talking about literally millions and millions of touch points before you even talk about how many on-hand SKU quantity you've got and so on and so forth. And so it sounds like a simple problem, but to scale that up and make it quick and usable, that's where the clever comes in.
Well, I want to talk about a little bit how you guys are giving back. You guys work with the Georgia Tech Co-op program,
that's
right?
Yep.
And it's a really important program. My brother actually went through it when he went to Tech.
Me too.
And I mean, it's a great program. I mean, people almost have their, if they're from Atlanta, they have their their schooling paid off by the time they finish
that's right.
it.
That's
so
right.
Talk a little bit about that, how you guys are giving back there and how that's helping you gain this really good talent to keep you moving
forward. So with all these other cool companies in town like CloudTags and Predicto and Intelliverse and Coca-Cola and Delta and UPS, I have to compete hard to get quality engineers. There are big companies that are going to put big numbers in front of those guys when they graduate. And on top of that, the co-op program is a number of things for me. Number one, it's a way to teach young people how to think. So you get a junior engineer, someone who's only a sophomore or whatever, and you can frame all of their design principles, all of how they implement, the tools they use, how they approach problems, how they think about them, how they are responsive. And because they're in a group of Georgia Tech engineers just like them, a lot of them were co-ops, almost all the senior engineers have instant credibility with the young guys because we all kind of play by the same rules. By the time that co-op is finished, he's a fully fledged employee for me. As a matter of fact, by the end of the first semester, they're usually operating on par with one of the junior engineers.
Wow,
and so
that's
by
huge.
Semester 2 and semester 3, so, you know, average rate for a co-op today starting is $20 an hour. Compare that to an $85,000 starting salary for a badass engineer, and it's a no-brainer.
Yeah,
right?
It's simple.
And so I invest. The first semester is a loss for me, getting them trained on the tools and how to do their jobs. Semester 2 and semester 3 are good. The most important part is hopefully we have kind of, I don't want to say indoctrinated, but gotten them wanting to stay with our culture, right? So I know what it's like to work at Needworks. I know what the expectations are. I know what I'm going to deliver, and I'm working with a bunch of cool people like me. So when I graduate, I'm going to take their offer seriously.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's, you know, for as much as it is an investment in the community, it is also grooming my future talent pool. And
definitely.
So, you know, the very first co-op I ever hired came to work for me full-time in January, and he hit the ground running because he knew everything we do already, and he was a great contributor to the team.
Like I said, it's a win-win because it's a major risk, and you have to invest a lot of money just to hire someone. If they don't work out, that's a loss normally.
Exactly. And so these guys already know me. They know the expectations. It's a great, great program. And if anybody out there listening and you're thinking about do it, absolutely take the co-op program at Georgia Tech.
Definitely.
You should do it.
All right. So what's next for you guys over the next year?
So as I mentioned previously, we have really had some good traction in retail. I would like to break into some other segments. So, you know, ERP is used across the board. Little Birdie told me that Georgia Power could stand some ERP revamp. I worked for a company doing work for Coca-Cola in a previous life. There are other folks that have huge amounts of data. We would love to just get into a few other segments. And so I'm actually expecting my first child in August.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And so I have magically found money in the budget to hire people to do stuff that I was doing personally. And so that's given me a little more time for the CEO space to go try and grow this. And my goal for this year is to get me one new client in a segment outside of retail.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. How can our listeners reach out to learn more, maybe hire you guys on, or if they're interested in working with you?
Sure. Yeah. The website is Needworks. It's NEADWERX.com. My email is nick@needworks.com or nick@nickdowney if you can't remember that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Well, next up on Atlanta Technology Leaders, we have Will McGinnis, analytic engineer at Predicto Analytics. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for sitting there patiently. You seem like you've enjoyed the other two interviews. So
yeah, they've been interesting.
Definitely. So what are you guys doing over at Predicto? And give me a little backstory about you and how you got involved with them.
So Predicto does predictive analytics for asset-intensive industries, trying to predict failures and when you need to do maintenance on these assets. So a good example we like to give is a steel mill.
Yeah.
So if you're producing steel, there's a lot of processes that happen in this plant, but there's maybe one particular asset that everything goes through. So mm-hmm. downtime on that asset's very, very expensive, right? For one example, ArcelorMittal is the world's largest steel producer. One of their many plants, they lose $22 million a year.
Wow.
because of such delays on one process. So what we would do is go in and use the sensors that they already have there. I mean, these plants have sensors everywhere. Right. They have more data than they even can begin to know what to do with. So we take that and we try and predict when these failures will happen so that they can go and do something, so they can take an action to keep it from happening or to prepare downstream processes for that failure.
Well, that seems like a really easy sale right there and a great value proposition. Hey, we can save you $22 million and you don't really have to do anything. Just give us all your data.
Yeah, you know, it's something that seems kind of like a no-brainer, and predictive analytics has been around for a long time in a lot of different areas, but it's taken a while to start to build up some steam in this particular one. I think partially just because of how interdisciplinary it is, right? You can't very easily just be a pure software background and go into a plant and know which sensors are going to do what. So it takes a lot of different skill sets to solve these problems.
So do you guys mainly just work with plants, or what else? What are the kind of companies you guys work with?
So areas that we like to try to be in, we're not a consulting company. We don't want to develop software for each individual company separately. So we like things that are somewhat regulated and can scale. So one area that we've had a lot of success in is transportation.
Okay.
Right. So railroads are all pretty similar, right? They all have to use the same rails. They all have more or less the same kinds of problems, the same kinds of sensors. And we can take a solution for one railroad and sell it back to the other thousands of railroads around. So it's spaces like railroad, metals production, power generation, things like that.
So other things you can get ROI. Once you build the system, you can get an ROI on it. So do you guys build all your software in-house? Or
we do. We do. We have our own platform. It's software as a service. It's on the cloud. As far as the client is concerned, they just push us data and get back actions. So they get, you know, send technician number 43 to this spot and do this repair.
Okay, so it's that simple. So how long have you guys been around? It seems like you guys have been around for a little bit.
Yeah, so we started about mid-2013.
Okay.
We've had clients starting this year, about mm-hmm. December, so we've been picking up steam pretty quickly, and things are picking up very fast.
So how do you guys get the experts in these fields to understand the kind of business problems these people are having, or how do you guys attack those problems?
So our founder and CEO, Mario Montag, he has a background in IT consulting.
Okay.
So he, you know, cut his chops going around and seeing firsthand these problems that everyone was having. He founded the company with Dr. Robert Morris. He's a world-renowned criminologist, actually. Mm-hmm. His research is in predicting whether criminals are going to go back to jail or not.
Okay, really? So,
And so he's the chief data scientist, so he's really got the expertise there. We've got developers. I personally am a mechanical engineer.
Okay.
My degree's from Auburn, so I guess I can't go
work. My fiance went to Auburn, so that works. So.
War Eagle.
War Eagle.
But so I kind of fill in that gap there of going in and saying, you know, this is the terminology that the mm-hmm. that the engineers are going to use, and these are the important sensors. We've got a few developers working on the actual software in the back end and all this, you know, data processing and handling, but we really don't like to talk about that as much.
Yeah.
We're really more concerned with the, you know, what action can we give to a client.
Definitely.
That helps to save them money.
Well, you break it down in terms they can understand, and everyone understands money. Do you have any personal stories that you can maybe share with a company that you've helped or?
Yeah, so one good one is this railroad one.
Yeah.
That's what we've been focusing on a lot lately. We're working with one of the biggest railroads in the United States. They have what they call hot box detectors.
Yes.
So when train wheels get too hot, they explode, and the train can derail.
Okay, that's not good.
And I think it kills maybe over 200 people a year. It's a huge problem. You don't hear about...
That's more than shark deaths, and you hear more about shark deaths.
Oh, yeah. You don't hear about these things unless it's enormous, but... Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of small accidents that are happening frequently because of this, and we're starting to have to transport a lot more oil by rail because of regulations on pipelines, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. So there have been regulations that have come in to where they have to have these hot box detectors every so often that measure the wheel bearing temperatures, and if the wheel bearings are over a certain temperature, they have to stop the train, and somebody has to go out and physically check it and see, is everything okay? And that's great, and it's made things a lot safer, but they're not always right. So these hot box detectors themselves fail. So they'll stop trains for no reason. And that's a big issue.
That is a huge issue. Because
it slows down their average train time. It makes them less competitive with other railroads. They directly lose money because they're delayed. They have to send people out there. It's a huge disaster. So we are taking all of the data that comes out of these. They're just boxes of sensors. I think they're $250,000 each. Mm-hmm. 6,000 of them just for this one railroad. And they have an enormous amount of data. We take that out, and we're predicting with 98% accuracy if it will fail in the next 7 days.
Wow. So
that gives them time. They get this. They can send out a tech. They can go calibrate it, do the repair, see what's wrong.
That's huge right there. And that's peace of mind. That's lawsuits avoided. That's everything. So.
And that's just one. I mean, they have tons of problems like this, and it's just one that we've tackled so
definitely
far.
So, I mean, you guys are relatively young. You started last year in 2013. What challenges have you guys faced as entrepreneurs trying to get this up and running?
So, like I said, it's a very multidisciplinary problem. It's a hard thing to do, and it can at times be hard to get in touch with the right people. We've been very fortunate so far, but a lot of these companies haven't really seen this kind of data.
Mm-hmm. Or seen the benefit of it.
At all. So, you know, we have to bring together maintenance records and sensor data, and it's all generally in different databases. They've never brought it together, let alone seen
it. And then you have to make them understand it.
Well, they get it, and they'll see this dashboard, and they tend to get really excited and say, well, I've never seen this before. And they get caught up on that, and it can be hard at times to get them past that and say, no, we can do more with this. We can predict something. And then that's really where we shine.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be hard to get. It can be hard to get past that first.
I can imagine that. So, what's your world domination plan going forward in 2014? Are you guys just going to tackle industry by industry and sort of just make those algorithms and get it set for industries, and then you guys can sell these to every industry once you have
exactly. R&D so, plan? So the first client in a new vertical is a bit more of a challenge. You know, we have to do a lot from scratch. But once we have that, we can go and sell it off. So it's just getting into more verticals and scaling them once
definitely.
We're there.
And do you guys have any competitors in the space? Is anyone else trying to do what you're doing right now?
So we do. It would generally be, I'd put it in three different categories. There's some very, very big companies, kind of like the SAPs in our area, where they're sort of monolithic and they want to have a three-year production cycle, and it's millions and millions of dollars, and they give you this big piece of software and nobody knows how to use it. Nobody can do anything with it. There's a lot in that space. There's some other very large corporations that have better solutions than that, but they want it to only be for their products.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't use our analytics on anything but what we sell.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't make a ton of sense because companies have more than one
type
of product that they want to do predictions on. And then there's, you know, the third startups that are trying to get into verticals, and there's a couple of us around. But
but you guys are leading in that space, definitely.
I like to think we have a little head start.
Definitely. So what's next for you guys? What are you tackling in the coming months?
So we like I said, we're trying to get into power gen.
Yeah.
We're doing a pilot study with a power plant in Saudi Arabia that we're very excited about. We're raising a round right now. Our CEO's out in Palo Alto, hopefully, doing some kind of deal. And like I said, you know, we're trying to get into new
verticals
and push really hard on those that we're in.
Sound like it's going pretty good for you guys.
No, it's going great. We're growing
excited.
Fast.
Well, we'll have to have you guys back on, and we'll probably have a lot of our guests back on. Just talk about where you guys are maybe 6 months from now. I'd love to definitely do that.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
So how do people reach out if they want to become new verticals or they have problems if they want you to solve?
So our website is just predicto.com. It's PREDIKTO. And my email is wmcginnis@predicto.com.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, last but definitely not least, we have Sean Gordon, the CEO of Intelliverse, and he's the newly appointed board member of the Greater Alpharetta Technology Network. I'm just going to say GATN because that's a mouthful. So that's welcome perfect. Welcome to the show. And you just want to get in and talk directly into that, Mike.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, perfect. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself. Briefly go over just Intelliverse's mission and purpose, and then let's talk about the GATN.
So Intelliverse has been around. It's not a traditional startup, but we've pivoted to, so we're kind of what we call ourselves a 30-year-old startup.
I love that.
So we're headquartered in Alpharetta. We've been around for a long time. Started out in a traditional, it's funny, I hear the word cloud nowadays, but you know, the telcos or telecommunications is really the traditional cloud. It's been around forever.
Mm-hmm,
it's
just, yeah.
Now everyone's throwing their applications up.
And everyone likes to use the buzzword, the cloud.
Yeah,
so.
Everything's in the cloud. but truly a cloud-based company. And what we did was we wound up pivoting a couple of years ago and using our platform that we already had for a long time and a lot of our customer base and started selling sales acceleration from a managed service and from a SaaS standpoint. So essentially, you guys mentioned David Cummings and yeah. Pardot earlier. Companies, B2B companies have been, you know, buying from Dun & Bradstreet and Hoover's and yeah. Data.com. I mean, they'll get lists. They got to feed their sales reps, right?
Exactly.
The challenge with that is once they got those lists, they'd kind of go into the abyss. You didn't know where they went, you know, what happened with those leads. So mm-hmm. 7 or 8 years ago, marketing automation, you know, came up in Atlanta. Actually was kind of a hotbed for that. You had like Silver Pop that just got acquired by IBM.
Yeah, we've had them on. And,
okay.
Yeah.
So. And then Pardot, as we all know.
We've had David on many there. Times.
But so there's been some really good exposure and growth in that marketing automation yeah. space. And essentially that was, look, let's grab that lead and let's blast it out from an email standpoint. And then let's figure out, okay, what happened with it? Did yeah. you click on it? Did you open it? Did you go to a website?
Yeah.
How long were you on it? I mean, big data and the analytics side of it to the extreme, right? And then you had CRM, right? You have yeah. Microsoft Dynamics. You've had, you know, Siebel's been around forever, the big guys, Salesforce. And so, you know, the problem that was missing in all that was that you could score it and lead it and have lead lists, whether it's inside sales
yeah.
or it's outside sales reps. But once you did that, then what happens with it?
Exactly.
So we kind of figured out a way to kind of take our platform and add the
solve that problem.
SaaS components to it so that sales reps could actually logically get big data analytics from those prospecting or customers are buying, unifying the message across the board, gamification of it to motivate
yeah.
people and see where they're at. And so it's kind of combining all those things together but kind of being synergistic with, you know, the lead list and the marketing
yeah.
automation and the CRM.
And
how do you make it all flow?
Well, that way it changes across the board, and I bet sales have gone up drastically. That's the value proposition, right?
You know, we've added in the past, we launched it in Q4 of last year, and we've had 700% growth on it already.
It's wow.
Pretty
okay.
exciting.
It's very exciting.
Well, we have the benefit of being around for 30 years, too, so we're not scratching and clawing as much. But it's been great. You know, a lot of great partnerships. Sabo's a big partner of ours that standardizes the whole proposal process within a CRM system, whether it's standalone mm-hmm. or Salesforce. So, and they're in Chicago, but and some other strategic partners as well. But it's been great.
Well, yeah, being a 30-year startup, I mean, you guys had that experience. So then you saw a problem. You're like, oh, let's pivot our company and run with it. And that's how some of the best companies in Atlanta have grown and even got acquired. I think AirWatch did that, and they were just acquired by VMware. So,
well, I love listening to these guys talk about these big behemoths because I'm an old AT&T guy. So. You know, back in the day, I think it was Bill Gates, he said that, if companies aren't changing, six to seven times faster internally than the rest of the world is externally, they're in big trouble. I would tell SAP, listen to these guys talk and these other big companies, great companies, but watch out for these guys. These guys are sharp.
Definitely. All right. Well, let's talk about how you've taken your experience as the CEO of Intelliverse and how you're using that as a board member of the GATN.
So really excited. Karen Cashin, kind of started this whole philosophy. And I live in Alpharetta. I've been there for 16 or 17 years. I started out in Dunwoody when I was young like these guys. But, said I'd never move up to what we call, the Tennessee, Georgia, which is Alpharetta, right?
Yeah.
But it's funny. It's only about 12 or 13 miles away from Buckhead. But back then it was seemed like it was forever.
Yeah.
But, you've got, I heard these guys talk about Georgia Tech and we've got a lot of great resources there, some of our engineers and what we call Intelliverse Labs at our company. They all work in Alpharetta, but a lot of them started downtown. And so when you, look at, you had Tag, and then you've got David Cummings again. And by the way, I just met him. Love him.
He's a great guy.
He started the Tech Village right now, and that's more Buckhead. So you've kind of got Midtown covered and you got Buckhead. But what about the 900 tech companies that are in Roswell, Sandy Springs, Alpharetta, Cumming area?
They're the best kept secret, really.
Well, and they're sprouting up. And not only that, but you've also got really big offices of the Fortune 500 that are all headquartered there. So you've got this massive area of these businesses. And for years, there'll be an event that's down. And Karen Cashin, who's the founder and president, I really believed in her vision on this because, if there's a meeting downtown at 8 o'clock to go listen to a speaker, it's hard for people to get up, and they got families and they want to get up at 5:30 in the morning to jump down to Buckhead, and then they got to get back to their office. But if it was right down the road at Windward Parkway.
Yeah.
So I went to an event and they knew about Intelliverse and our company and what we've been doing. And another guy named Mike McGuire at Model Metrics was on the board, and he was a customer of ours. And I was like, well, this is pretty interesting. So I went and checked it out, and we talked about where Karen and the rest of the board members that they already had wanted to take it. And we were like, this is something that we think would be really exciting for the greater Alpharetta technology, but it's really Roswell, Sandy Springs, and Cumming, and even Gwinnett for that matter.
Definitely.
I'm over in Duluth area.
So what's the overall goal? If everything goes perfect, where do you want it to be here in the next 2 years or so?
I don't think it's one thing. I think that, the traditional way that people look at these things is obviously networking is obviously a key thing and having, groups, but it's also more of a community base.
Yeah.
I think that's where it's a little bit different, right? Because you can go to another technology council somewhere downtown, but are you really meeting with the people that are in your community? So I thought that was an interesting twist because, quite frankly, I live in Windward, for example, and there's 2,500 homes there, and there are owners and VPs and the head of AT&T Wireless lives up there.
You would never know.
You would never know. But there's – so I think that's the first goal, is to try to create more of a community-based technology networking council. Certainly there would be member benefits and speakers, but I also in talking with Karen, we view this as also a resource. So if you think about events that are going on, there are businesses up there that, might be interested in, they want a speaker, for example, on big data, or what's an alternative to ERP. And, I think Nick would be a great person to come on up there. And
thank you.
You're welcome. Be a great guest speaker. There's a great thing going on in Avalon right now, up Exit 10, and, big technology conference center, and there's going to be, shops and their high-end stores, and, that could be a great place, for you to come up and check it out. So I think it's more community-based. I think the traditional, networking and getting this, but also maybe as a resource, a real valuable resource to businesses that are up there that might, want to get their message across, or even look to what they could get possibly from an association, whether it's a speaker, whether it's some sort of partner and business association discounts, membership benefits, what do you get? The local businesses are all supporting each other. So kind of exciting.
Well, definitely. Just and you mentioned community-based there to be able to get in front of and interact with different people. You can learn from their scar tissue, maybe the mistakes they made, and help all the businesses can really help each other grow. I would love, I think it'd be great to maybe get a bi-monthly segment or something, go where you bring on some of maybe your members so they can tell their stories, because I'm sure you guys have a lot of great companies in Alpharetta that would benefit from maybe being on here.
Oh, we certainly would appreciate that. We've already grown fivefold so far, and it's kind of exciting. We've got another big event coming up in August. I'm pretty sure it's the 21st, but I might be messed up. Karen's going to kill me if it's not August 21st, but to your point, it's not just about the local businesses and the traditional brick and mortar technology. It's also about the synergies, I think, in the community to give back to it as well, because we're supporting local businesses through this as well. You know, everyone's charitable and everyone talks about being charitable and it's a great cause. But I think one of the things that we can do is as an organization too, is actually give back and try to, you know, startup type of companies that are looking for funding or capital. You know, this could be a wealth of resources for them that they don't have to go through an investment banker or through a due diligence process to figure out. You know, maybe there's some people up in that have been there and done that that could be mentors to some businesses above and beyond because they've been doing it for 25, 30 years with, you know, AT&T, Siebel, EMC, Corp, I mean, whatever it might be.
Well, and having those resources in Alpharetta where these companies are, I mean, it's tough if they have to go all the way down and maybe try to be part of ATV or join up there. So this is a good community base that's where they are, where their businesses are, which could really help them.
Yeah, and quite frankly, we don't see it so much as it's us or them. It's,
Yeah, definitely.
It's synergistic, right? It's like we'd love to have everyone all
everyone supports each
together,
other.
But at the flip side, if you're going to be up there, you know, it stinks if you've got a great speaker downtown, but you can't get to it. But now you've got a venue where you can meet those people locally, like you said, in the community base. So
definitely,
really exciting.
So, do you guys have any events coming up? Or
we do. It's like I said, it's August. I want to say 21st, but I'm going to have to get back to you on that. We might have to change that date. But
that's fine too.
It's somewhere around there.
Definitely. So, where can our listeners go to get more information, get those dates, what's going on, and where they can sign up and maybe join?
Well, so there's definitely flyers. There's a lot of PR going around about it. I think that it's GATN.com is our website. But if you can't, I mean, you know, honestly, get in touch with me, you know, link in with me. You know, I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, you know, whatever it is that you can. But if you're interested in finding out more or want to get in touch, you know, feel free to reach out to me at Sean, S-E-A-N dot Gordon. G-O-R-D-O-N at Intelliverse.com, and I'd be glad to talk to you about anything that we can, either it's membership or supporting or how you can get involved or go to the next event.
Definitely. Well, go one more time just for our listeners. Let's talk about the membership benefits of joining the GATN.
So, you know, again, I think the biggest benefit is that you're going to have access to people that, you know, you typically would maybe go to an event to go try to meet or network with. They're already up there in the northern North Georgia, northern 400 corridor. You know, you're looking at CEOs of big companies, small companies, whether it's the Fortune 500 or whether it's, you know, some startup company that's got an office off of Mansell Road, right? It's people that live up in that community that whether they've been in business for 30 years or for, you know, 3 months. There's a lot of wealth of knowledge, and from a networking standpoint, I think that would be important. I think more importantly, if you do live up in that area, though, now you've kind of established ties in that community-based area where you've got, you know, access to all the other events and other people that might be coming to speak that maybe aren't from Atlanta. There might be something that interests you in that standpoint. I think also membership is going to allow you certain discounts to the different vendor sponsors that are going to be up there, especially if you're in a startup environment, if you're looking for whether it's funding or best practices or anything that's business related, especially from a technology standpoint, you know, it'll be a great resource to kind of check out as we continue to evolve. And I think the events themselves are just, you know, great in general because, ironically, David Cummings, that's how I met him. He was our premier speaker a couple
that's
weeks
awesome.
Ago. And so it was a really good turnout, and we continue to want to tap on Atlanta. You know, I mean, we talk about you know, Atlanta, you know, kind of being the next, we'll call it the baby Silicon Valley. Some people would laugh if you're from Atlanta, but if you think about
it. No, it's really true.
We got Georgia Tech, we got Emory, we got other small schools.
And we're actually keeping our Georgia Tech students. It used to be they would all go off to the
Silicon
West Coast,
Valley.
But now we're keeping them.
And it's expensive to go out there. And so if you look at the trends, and especially, you know, one of the funny things is look at all the movies and the TV shows that are being done in Atlanta.
Yeah, definitely.
Now. You know, they're not doing it in Silicon Valley. Why are they doing it? There's a lot of tax breaks here.
Yeah.
But the weather is nice here. So there's a lot of advantages. But we're seeing, in my opinion, we're seeing a tsunami here in the Southeast. And so this is the beginning stages for all of, you know, greater Atlanta of a technology kind of a raise here. And so it's already you see a lot of great companies like the ones I've listened to today, as well as a lot of new ones that are starting up. So it's an exciting time to be from Atlanta, more importantly, Alpharetta.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Great. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Band of Coders, for making this show possible so we can do this every week. This is Kevin Finn for our guest today, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.